Why did we start Bluetooth?
Well, in the last decades, we have seen enormous progress in microelectronics, VLSI integration, and we are able to integrate millions of transistors on a few square centimeters. And that has led to two trends. One is that devices are shrinking in size. You see that all around you. You see laptops, notebooks, which you can take with you, PDAs, cell phones that are shrinking and shrinking. And on the other end, another trend we see is that those devices get more and more functionality. More and more functions are integrated to one device. Cell phones get addressing functions, organizing functions, notebook gets telephony functions. And you see that the functionality between telephone applications and computer applications are vanishing, and we are merging all those functionality in one single device, physical integration. And we're heading for devices which we call infocom devices, which integrate all those kinds of applications in one single device. However, we have a problem if we are going to continue on this line. And the problem is there are the user interfaces. On the one hand, the user wants to use his keyboard, use his screens, but that becomes a problem if you want to make things very small. So we are looking at an alternative for this. And that is how Bluetooth was created. Of course, we want to have integration of functionality, but does that really mean that it also has to be physically integration? What if we could connect these devices very easily through a wireless link by putting just radio devices in every unit? So put in an antenna on every unit, put a very cheap radio interface, and then if you need to operate these units as one unit, you make a connection between them and they operate as one, and only at the moment you need it. And in this case, we can also separate functions, for example, separate the microphone and speaker function of the mobile phone and put that in a headset to have better benefit to the user. Of course, you can do this by cables as we do today, or even by infrared, but radio is much more flexible. You can do things even without the user knowing it. Well, what does Bluetooth do more for you? Well, we started with the cable replacement, so we want to get rid of all the cables here, or even the cable between the laptop and the projector here. And that was our first application, and that's also where we are focusing on now, where the first products will emerge. But we can do more. We want to work on personal ad hoc networking, that we can network wirelessly different units together. And we're also looking for fixed access to fixed points, like the PSTN lines, the local area lines, and also using the mobile phone as a relay between the devices and the mobile network. Who is Bluetooth? It comes from Harald Blåtand, which was king of Denmark in the Viking ages. And he Christianized the Danes, he made peace in the Nordic countries, and we found a stone in Jelling, which is a city in Denmark, and we saw King Bluetooth. And he already saw the benefits of seamlessly connecting mobile phones and laptops. So he is the forerunner of this technology. We thought, well, this should be the name of the technology. In the beginning of last year, 1998, we created a special interest group because we knew from Ericsson's side that if we only have those devices, Bluetooth device in the mobile, and it cannot connect to anything else, that would not work. We need to have more people involved here so that we get a good proliferation of Bluetooth devices. And the idea was that we should have a very good mix of companies in this consortium. So we have two leading companies in mobile phone manufacturing, two leading companies in laptop manufacturing, IBM and Toshiba, and then chip integrator, which is Intel. And those are the five promoters that are setting the standard and deciding which way we go in the Bluetooth technology. And we have already over 650 adopters that have assigned to support this technology and make products with it. Well, that was the marketing talk. Now I'm coming to the technical contents of what Bluetooth does and what it is. And I will tell you also how we came to the design and what trade-offs we made. Well, first of all, we have to have a very low-cost solution because we are thinking of putting this radio interface in any thing you can think of. So it has to add very little cost to already the low cost of consumer electronics. It has to have very low energy consumption, because when you're thinking of battery-driven equipment, you put this radio interface in. It has to have robust operation, and I'll come to that later on. It has to do with the radio band we are operating in. We want to have high aggregate capacity, because if you can think of that, all of you would use their laptop now with their mobile phones at the same time, you would have a lot of information at the same time in the air. So we need high aggregate capacity of our systems. We want a flexible usage. That's always a requirement that the user can easily use this. Child and grandpa can use it. Multimedia support, that means that we want to support both voice and data from the beginning. And also we want to have global usage. That means that our first target group were the traveling businessmen with his mobile phone and his laptop and all his cables. We should get rid of that. And he's traveling all over the world, so it has to be allowed to operate worldwide. Well, to be able to operate this system worldwide, there's only one possibility with respect to radio spectrum, and that's the 2.4 GHz ISM band. This band is the industrial scientific medical band, which was used for that applications formerly in the US, but it's now given free, and it's all over the world. And this band, you do not need a license. Everybody can use it, so it's especially appropriate for consumer devices. And it's also available all over the world. However, if you are operating this band, there are some restrictions. First of all, you have to use spreading techniques, because everybody should have a fair access to this radio band. And Bluetooth accomplishes this by using frequency hop spread spectrum techniques. If you use a frequency hop spreading technique, your bandwidth has to be limited to 1 megahertz. And also Bluetooth fulfills that, because in 1 megahertz channel, we support a 1 megabit per second symbol rate. We know that we are having multiple uncoordinated networks in this band that exist and will cause mutual interference to each other. And we have solved that by making the link very robust. We are using very fast frequency hopping, short data packets. So when we get a collision, only a small amount of data is lost. And also for the voice, we're using a special coding technique and short packets so that it's robust in noisy environments. Microwaves are using also this band that adds additional interference. 2.4 gigahertz electronics runs at high current levels, and the interface has been tailored to minimize the current consumption. We have low power modes. We have looked at the standby procedure to make it very low power. And we also have relaxed link budget. And that way, we are also able to integrate all of the basic functions on a single chip. So that's the idea that we will have in the future, a one-chip radio where to include both the physical layer and also the support logic in one single chip, without any external components. How does the channel look like of the Bluetooth? Well, we have divided the time domain in slots. And we are exchanging information by way of packets. And these packets are transmitted back and forth between two units. I call this a master and slave. I will tell you later what it is. Anyway, the time slots are normally 625 microseconds in length. And the packets are transmitted here. Alternatively. And every packet is sent on a different frequency. That's the indication above. So we are hopping at a frequency rate of 1600 hops per second, where you back and forth exchange your packets. And that's why we call it also a frequency hop time division duplex channel. There is no difference between uplink and downlink in hop selection. They use 79 channels in the 80 megahertz ISM band. As I said, the ISM band has been divided into 79 hops of 1 megahertz width. And the units that talk to each other hop in a pseudo-random way. So we have a frequency hop CDMA system through this band of 80 megahertz. It's how it hops there in time. And normally, if you look at systems that operate in this band, like wireless LAN systems, everybody is connected to the same channel. That means that they use the same pseudo-random hop sequence. and they all talk to each other, and you get a kind of network. Well, we have not done that in Bluetooth because we said, okay, most of the units, they only talk to each other. So A wants to talk to B, C wants to talk to D. And if you are sharing 1 megahertz, you have to you see all the information flowing around, but part of it is not intended for you. And why should you share 1 megahertz with other users if you can do it in a different way? Because, of course, you have to divide the effective throughput per user by the bandwidth you have, which is 1 megabit per second. So in Bluetooth, we have very small networks, how we call it, network only between the units that really want to exchange information, and they each have their own pseudo-random hopping sequence. So user A and B has one pseudo-random pseudo-noise hopping sequence, and user C and D that wants to talk to each other have another hopping sequence. And that way, we get a much higher aggregate throughput, because now we can use the entire 80 megahertz instead of only 1 megahertz of one channel. Of course, you will have collisions once in a while, because those networks are uncoordinated, so we cannot have orthogonal hopping sequences here. But we take that into account in our air interface. To be able to connect more than just two units, to have a point-to-point connection, we have created the concept of PicoNets. And the PicoNets consists of a master and up to 7 slaves. Well, in fact, we have peer-to-peer communication, so not a unit is every unit is the same. We have the same radio units in every device. However, when you set up a connection, one of the units gets assigned the role of a master, and that's because he has to control the traffic on the channel. But in fact, every unit can become a master. And by definition, the one that starts up this communication is assigned the master role. But if you have such a channel network, you can always assign the master to another unit, and the master then becomes slave. Well, we only have room for 7 slaves over here, and that's also, as I said, in the idea of Bluetooth, that we have only units connected to each other that really want to talk to each other, and we want to limit the amount of users that share this 1 megahertz channel. Well, the master decides the frequency hop sequence, so he determines the frequency hop channel, and it is done by his address. Each unit has a unique address, and the address determines the sequence which you are going to hop through if you are connected to this master. So all the slaves connected to the master have the same sequence because they get the address from the master, and to get the phase in the sequence, we use the clock of the master. All the units have free running clocks, which are never adjusted, but as soon as they make a connection, they add an offset to their own clock in such a way that they are synchronized to the master, and that way all the units are synchronized, they have the same sequence, and they hop in synchrony during the channel, over the channel. Well, the hop selection mechanism is illustrated here. We have some kind of black box which determines if you have an address here, it determines a sequence. And if you put in a phase here, it determines where you are in the sequence, and then you get out a hop. And the idea is that you can very quickly hop from jump from one PicoNet to another PicoNet. If you change the master address, you get instantaneously another sequence. And if you change the offset here, you can very quickly go to another phase in the sequence. So this is the native clock which you have in your system, and this is offset to synchronize it to the master. Of course, the master would have zero here. But in that way, I will show you later that you can make connection between PicoNets by changing these two parameters. As I said, the information is exchanged by way of packets, and the packets consist of three parts. It starts with an access code, then we have a packet header, and then we have a payload. Well, the access code is a very important part of our packet, because the access code, it's unique for the PicoNet. Every PicoNet has a different access code, and the access code, again, is derived from the address of the master. And every packet exchanged on the PicoNet has the same access code, so both from the slave to the master and from the master to the slave. And what we do in our receivers, we have a match correlator against this access code, and only if this correlator fires, we will process the rest of the packet, because then we know, okay, there's a packet there. If you have two PicoNets and they would land on the same hop channel, and you would not have destructive interference, then we would be able that you get a packet from another PicoNet. But because of this one will have a different ethics code, access code, you will not process this packet. So you will not be able to steal packets from another PicoNet. And that is very possible, because you have to understand that this is in the data system as well. So sometimes in your own slot, nothing is being sent because there's no data, but you get a packet from another PicoNet, which is clear for you then, without any interference. But because of the access code, you can distinguish from the packets from other PicoNets. Well, then we have the packet header. I'll have in the next slide some parameters which we use over there. And then we have the payload, which includes the user information, which can be data or voice. The packet header contains control information. First of all, we have what we call an active member address, and that's because we want to distinguish between the slaves within one PicoNet. So I told you we are able to support up to 7 slaves. So we have a 3-bit address, and the all zero address is used for broadcasting. We have a type code, which determines what kind of payload is following in this packet. We have flow control. We have some parameters for retransmission to control automatic retransmission in data communications. And we have an header error checking to check for errors in this entire header. And this header is, by the way, protected by a 1/3 rate code for error correction code to make it more robust. But as I said, we want to support both voice and data. Well, voice has a typical circuit switch behavior. That means that it's a continuous stream of information that's transmitted over the channel. And circuit switching is the best networking feature to support this kind of communications. However, we also want to support the packet data traffic, and data is very bursty, and then packet switching is much more advantageous, because then you use the channel in a much more efficient way. And what we have done in our system is to mix both circuit switching and packet switching. And how do we do that? Well, we have defined two different links. One is the synchronous connection oriented link, which is a link between two units. It's circuit switching, and it's now intended for carrying voice. It's a symmetric link, so there's as much data in one direction as it is the other direction. It's synchronous, and it's set up by reservation of the slots at a regular interval, at a fixed interval. In addition to that, we have what we call the asynchronous connectionless link, which is based on packet switching, which is shared by all the units in the PicoNet. And it can be symmetric, or it can also be asymmetric, depending on what kind of transfer flow you have. Support asynchronous services, and it's based on a polling access scheme, where the master has control over the packet exchange. I will now give you an example how this will look like, where we have a mixed SCO and ACL link, where I have a master and I have three slaves. Well, first of all, I have a voice connection between the master and slave one. And what I do is that I, every six slots, I reserve a packet, I reserve a slot where my SCO packet, which the with the voice data, is exchanged in. And those slots are completely reserved for these two units. In between the slots of the SCO link, I can send data packets. This is an ACL packet covering more than one slot. I will talk about that later. But anyway, that's directed towards slave 2, and only slave 2 is now allowed to send something back. And in the header of the ACL link, there is an AM address, which is directed towards slave 2. So he knows, okay, that packet is mine. And then he knows also that in the next return slot, he is allowed to return something back. So not slave 1 or slave 3, because they are not addressed in the packet in the downlink. Well, we can have similar traffic for the other slaves, etc. And then each time the master decides, okay, who is going to send a packet to. And if you have packets sent from master to slave, you implicitly pull the slave, so then he can send something back. But if there's no information to send from master to slave, once in a while you have to pull the slave, because he's not allowed to transmit on his own, because otherwise we would have collisions on the channel. Of course, we will have collisions in the channel because of uncoordinated interference from other piconets. And in the voice link, we are dealing with that by using a waveform coding technique for speech, which is called continuous variable slope delta modulation, which was originally used by the military because it's very robust in a noisy environment. When you get noise or interference, you don't hear that as clicks or cracks, but you start to hear that as in background noise, which becomes more and more pronounced when the interference increases. But still, you can hear very well who's talking and also what he's talking. So what is it? It's delta modulation. It follows the waveform. And what you do is that you go up or down and you transmit it in a digital way with ones and zeros. For the data, we support longer packets, longer than one slot, in order to have higher data rates through our channel. And if we increase the length of the slot, we do not hop inside the slot anymore. Because for hopping, you always need this part and the access code as well to train your receiver front end. However, when we are going to the next slot, we always come back to the original hopping scheme because the other slaves, which are not part of this packet, may not know what's happening here. In that way, the piconet remains synchronized in the frequency hop way. Now, what kind of data rates are we now able to support? Well, here are some packet types. The M is for packet types which have a two-third rate fourth error correction coding. So you see that there is some parity bits added at the expense of the user rate. This is, by the way, user rate. The one packets are packets where only one slot is being used. Three packets are three slots, and five are five slots. And you see in the symmetric case, it means that we have the same amount of data flowing in both directions. So we get 108.8 kilobits in one direction and 108.8 in the other direction. And in the asymmetric case, we use a very long packet in one direction. So for example, DH5, we use a DH5 packet in one direction, we get this effective throughput. And then still we are able to support a single DH1 packet in the return direction, and we still support this throughput simultaneously. So if you add those numbers here, for example, you are around 800 kilobits per second, and our instantaneous rate is 1 megabit per second, so we get about 85% efficiency. Well, as I said, we apply for error correction coding. In the header, it's always using a one-third rate code, which is a very simple code. It's a bit repeat code. And for certain voice channels, we can also support that one-third rate code. For the data channels and also for the speech channels, we can apply a two-third rate code. We can decide whether we want to use this code or not. So we also have support packets which don't have coding in the payload at all. And for the data channel, we use automatic retransmission query, ARQ. It's only used in the data, so not in the voice, because voice we can allow variable delays. And what we do is that we use a very fast acknowledgement, not acknowledgement scheme. That means that if a packet is sent, in the return packet already says whether the packet was received correctly or not. That also means that we have to do the processing of the packet very quickly, because you know that in the return packet you already have to give information how the packet was received. A sequencing number is used to keep the received packets in sequencing order. And as I said, ACK and NACK are piggybacked in the header in the return direction. Connection establishment. How do we make a connection? Well, to make a connection, it's just like with your telephone. You have to dial a number. In this, our case, we have to know the address of the unit we want to reach. If you don't know that address or you don't know which units are around you, you can do an inquiry. I'll tell you later what that means. But if you have then done the inquiry and you know, okay, these are the units in my area, this is the unit I want to reach, and this is his address, then I can do a direct page. I dial him, and then the connection is established. Well, inquiry. We have a unit A here, and we have just some units, peer units, that are in standby mode. They once in a while wake up to see whether there's some information in the air. So they are not locked to any network or something. They just, what they do is that most of the time they sleep, and once in a while they wake up, and then they either they look for their own address, so that if somebody is paging them, or they look for the inquiry message, so that somebody is doing inquiries. Well, say unit A is sending out inquiry messages. You broadcast them, and because of the limited range, not all the units get that. But the units that get it transmit back a response, and the response includes their address. It includes what system clock they are currently using, and it also includes information on what kind of devices they are. For example, this may be a mobile device, mobile phone device. This may be a laptop. This may be a printer, and it's quite advantageous for him to know which address corresponds to which kind of device it is, because if he wants to print, he does not want to make connection to him to find out whether he really is a printer or a mobile phone. Well, then A has got all this information, and say he then decides, okay, I want to make a connection. Then he does a very direct page. He pages a unit. Automatically, he becomes a master, because he was the one that started up this communication. What then happens is that A transfers his information, his address, and his clock to B, and then they turn over to a PicoNet, which is then controlled by A, so his hopping channel and his face in this hopping channel. And B just follows in. And then A can make connections to other units that are in range. And as I said, you get then the master and the slave definition. But as I said also later on, A can always give this master rule to another unit. But you can only have one master in the PicoNet, because he will decide the finish hop sequence and the phase in the sequence. Well, now about scatternets. As I said, we will have several uncoordinated PicoNets sharing the same area. For instance, this is an example where we have in one area two laptops that talk to each other. We have a mobile phone that talks to a headset. We have a laptop that's connected to an access point and the mouse. We have here a laptop which is connected to a printer. And they all operate in pretty much independently. So each has his own PicoNet, each has his own master, and they hop in a different way through the 80 megahertz. And once in a while you get collisions, but then we have automatic retransmissions and we have the robust voice scheme to deal with that. Well, let's see how those PicoNets are now integrated. Say we see them just as units. We're going to assign the master and slave roles. Well, we had the laptop that's talking to the access point and the mouse. We had the mobile phone talking to the headset. We had a laptop talking to the printer. And we also had a laptop talking to another laptop. Oh, this is a bit of a problem, because how would we do that? Because these are two masters. Well, the master role is only a temporary role that you have at a certain moment. What you can do is a unit can be half master, half slave, not at the same time, but at different spaces in time. So what we do, we apply time division multiplexing. This unit, for a number of slots, he is in his own PicoNet, talking to the access point and the, the mouse. And for another time, he is a slave to the laptop, and then they can communicate information in this PicoNet, where he is a master from. And in that way, you can make interconnections between different PicoNets. It doesn't operate instantaneously, but you can switch between the jump and between the different PicoNets. And that's what we call scatternet networking. Well, finally, some words about standardization. We are currently developing a de facto standard for this system. And what I've been talking about is the RF part, the basement part, and the link manager part. RF is the radio layer. The basement is the layer above that, dealing with the packets. And link manager is dealing with setting up connections and also with things like authentication, etc. And then on top of that, we are defining a software stack. We have a stack here for audio. We support CVD, but we also support PCM, log PCM, and other voice schemes, which are, of course, less robust. And we have the TCP IP stack on it and other stacks. For example, RFCOM is in the serial bus. And they work through a logical link control application layer, L2CAP. And Bluetooth, it's important to say that it's not only in hardware description of the radio, but it's an application framework as well. What we want to have is that we provide a complete system, including the firmware and also the software. Of course, your own applications you can write on top of this. And that way we guarantee that we get interoperability, because it's only the physical air interface and hardware that would not be sufficient to get two units talking to each other. Well, that concludes my talk. The specification 1.0 release will be in July 1999. Then it will also become public to the world. Products which we are going to release coordinated way with the other manufacturers, Ericsson, IBM, Toshiba, Nokia, Intel, are scheduled for the end of 1999. And what are the things you can expect of the fourth products? Well, cellular phones. We will have plugs which you can connect to your mobile phone that will have a Bluetooth interface. We will have cellular phones as well with integrated Bluetooth technology. We will have laptops, integrated Bluetooth radios, but also PC cards which you can just click in your laptops. And we will also have headsets talking to, for example, your mobile phone, so that you can separate your speech functionality from your mobile phone.